Introduction. The Bible writer Luke tells us that immediately after Jesus' resurrection, he appeared to his disciples and spoke to them about references to himself in the Hebrew Scriptures. "These are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled, which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me." Luke 24, verse 44. Jesus thus defined the Hebrew Scriptures as comprising three major sections. Today, Judaism refers to them as the Tanakh, from the first letters of the Hebrew Torah, the law, Nevi'im, the prophets, and Ketuvim, the writings, which begins with the book of Psalms. In other words, Jesus told his followers that his coming had been prophesied throughout the ancient Scriptures that would form the basis of New Testament belief and practice. The books that make up the three-part division of Scripture were ordered differently from what we see in today's Eastern Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and Protestant Bibles. For the most part, the Tanakh order is the one we'll follow in this three-volume series. We'll focus on the context and highlights of each of those 39 books of the Bible, rather than providing commentary on every verse. Volume 1 covers the major stories and principles of the law. It's helpful to note that the word Torah carries the additional meaning of instruction or teaching, and is not limited to law. The section of the Scriptures known as the Law contains much that relates to the regulation of life, including the Ten Commandments and the rules for living in a land-based economy. However, it also includes several books that do not contain much law, but a great deal of narrative and instruction. Moses is traditionally thought to be the compiler of the majority of the five books. Though nothing is said directly to support this, there are indications of his authorship in places. We begin with Genesis, the first book in the five volumes of the Law, or Pentateuch. Chapter 1, The Book of Origins. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. It's said that if you don't know where you've come from, you can't know where you're going. Deceptively simple, profoundly true. The book of Genesis contains much about the origins of the planet we inhabit, of humankind and human society. Yet it has been relegated by most to the realm of myth, in the sense of being fanciful or not true. Here we take a different approach. In this exploration of the first book of the Bible, we'll find that Genesis illuminates and informs modern life beyond the use of myth in either sense of the word. For example, it addresses the origins of the heavens and the earth, of plant, animal, and human life, of marriage, family, and destiny, of good and evil, of violence and murder, of society and civilization, and of ethnic groups, nations, and languages, to name a few. In these vital areas, if we keep an open mind, we'll see that Genesis is neither fanciful nor untrue. The rest of the Bible quotes Genesis or mentions its content more than it does any other book. Of the 165 passages quoted or referred to in the New Testament, about 100 are taken from Genesis chapter 1 to chapter 11, the section that many want to downplay as unreliable. Jesus mentioned Genesis several times, demonstrating his stand on its content and relevance. The book opens with the well-known statement, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." It's a sentence rich in underlying meaning, especially when we consider some of the Hebrew terms. Bereshit bara Elohim. In the beginning, God created. In the beginning does not necessarily mean the beginning of the creation we know, but the origins of the heavens and the earth at an even earlier time. We'll explore this further as we continue. Elohim, God, is a masculine plural noun connected to a singular form of the verb created, bara. Some scholars have proposed that the plural is used to indicate majesty or might, perhaps something like the royal we. But a related passage in the New Testament describes Christ as the Word of God, from the Greek word logos, and the companion of another being known as God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. This shows us that more than one member of the God family was involved in the creation of everything. Consistent with the plural Elohim, Genesis 1 verse 26 records God as saying, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness." These two beings, then, were responsible for perfectly creating the heavens and the earth. Here is the point of origin of all that follows. Verse 2 describes a world very different from the perfection indicated by bara, a verb form that is only ever used of God's creative acts, never those of human beings. As the theological word book of the Old Testament notes, this distinctive use of the word is especially appropriate to the concept of creation by divine fiat. Yet verse 2 speaks of the planet as waste, empty and dark. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. The Hebrew translated as without form and void is tohu vavohu. But surely what God creates cannot be confused and chaotic. Indeed, the prophet Isaiah tells us that God did not create the earth in vain or empty, tohu. Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 18. And in another context, the apostle Paul wrote, God is not the author of confusion. 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 33. A clue to this puzzle may be found in the verb translated as was. Some scholars point out that the Hebrew verb can also read became. There are several examples elsewhere in Genesis. Thus, we could understand that the earth became formless and empty. This presents the possibility of a gap in time of unknown length between God's creative act in verse 1 and the condition of desolation in verse 2. Was there an intervening event that caused the earth to be reduced to desolation? While there are two other major explanations of this section of Genesis, each dependent on different views of the grammar, this so-called gap theory resolves many questions. It allows that the desolate earth of verse 2 was not a product of the original creation, since verse 1 establishes the earth's perfect original state in the beginning. Further, it allows that the first word of verse 2, ve, part of the compound ve ha'aretz and the earth, be translated now rather than and. Interestingly, many Bibles do not translate the word ve at all. Yet the Masoretic text provides a notation that the word is disjunctive rather than conjunctive. That is to say, the thoughts expressed are not to be construed as joined together. Verse 2 is not the result of verse 1. This is certainly not something to ignore. According to this grammatical point, the verse should begin, "Now the earth was or became waste and void." What could have caused this condition? Some scholars propose that the gap allows for Satan's rebellion against God before the creation of humankind, as described in Isaiah 14, 12 through 15, and Ezekiel 28, 12 through 19. The destruction was the result of God's judgment against Satan and his fallen angelic followers. Satan, Hebrew for adversary, was previously known as Daystar, Hebrew Helel, an archangel whose role was guardian of the original earth and who sinned by attempting to overthrow God. When it comes to the origins of various aspects of the world we now inhabit, this gap theory, or understanding, has great explanatory power. It sheds light on many other scriptures in both Old and New Testaments. Verse 2 concludes, "And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters." Nothing is said here, nor in John 1, about the Spirit as a person. Indeed, here the Spirit is compared to a protective bird that hovers or flutters, in Hebrew, merahefet, waiting for her eggs to hatch. At this point, recreation has not yet begun. But the Spirit or power of God will be utilized, as we read in Psalms. You send forth your Spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth. Psalm 104 and verse 30. What is popularly thought of as the biblical creation story begins then not with verses 1 and 2, but verse 3. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Here are three elements. God speaks, the words he speaks, the outcome. Four more steps follow in the creative pattern that emerges in Genesis 1. Evaluation, further action, naming, finalizing. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Verses 4 and 5. In contrast to the desolation of verse 2, what God does in the creation week is often pronounced good. Verses 4, 10, 12, 18, 21, and 25, and finally very good, verse 31. This seven-step pattern continues with slight variation through the 6 days of creation. Here we need not enter the day-age debate over creation through eons of time, but simply observe that the language indicates that days are days as we know them. This is apparent in the reference to each day being numbered and comprising evening and morning, from sunset to sunset, and on the fourth day the mention of signs and seasons, and days and years. Finally, on the seventh day, God established the Sabbath, another calendar term, by ceasing from work. Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. The system of time as we know it is in process. What we can note with respect to geologic eras is that the gap in time between verses 1 and 2 allows for billions of years. But there is more to be learned from the description of those first few days. The creative act of the first day, in fact, resolves one aspect of the confusion and emptiness mentioned in verse 2 by letting light shine and separating darkness from light. Two other acts of resolution by separation on sequential days include the revealing of the expanse we know as the sky, the firmament, by dividing the earth's waters below from the atmosphere's waters above, and the revealing of land, along with plant life, by dividing it from sea. In parallel, the fourth, fifth, and sixth days see the enriching of the creative acts of the first 3 days by the addition of light and life. On the fourth day, the sun, moon, and stars become visible, filling the sky. Next, marine life and birds fill the seas and atmosphere. And on the sixth day, animal and human life fills the land. When the first human beings are created, Genesis 1, 26 and 27, God makes it clear that this is a distinct and different creation. First, as we've seen, humankind, in Hebrew Adam, is made in God's image and likeness. This is not said of any other part of creation. It is a unique aspect of human origins and speaks not only to the present, but also to human destiny. Human beings, male and female, were created of physical material, Genesis 2, verse 7, and verses 21 and 22, limited by time, but with the potential of receiving eternal spiritual life from God. They were also given a position of dominance over the rest of creation, Genesis 1, 28, but they were to nurture and care for the creation around them in the Garden of Eden. We learn this in Genesis 2, which provides further detail about the origins of humanity. It's significant that this foundational book has a statement about how humans should relate to the natural world around. The Hebrew words for dress, abad, and keep, shamah, indicate working and guarding, cultivating and protecting. Certainly, there is no suggestion of exploiting and ruining. Recall that this chapter of Genesis begins with the establishment of the Sabbath rest, time made holy by God's cessation from work. It provided the first humans with an example to follow of taking time to rest and recuperate once a week as they focused on the Creator and His work. Jesus would later explain that the Sabbath was created as a benefit for humanity and not a burden, as some had made it. He said, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath." Mark 2 and verse 27. Genesis continues with a backward glance at the creation of Adam and Eve on the preceding day, and forward with the entry of evil. The intrusion of Satan into human history occurs in Eden. As Hillel, he was dominant on earth as the good guardian angelic power until his opposition to God brought his downfall. Now the object of his attention became Adam and Eve, the potential new rulers of the domain he once protected.